Jesus is by the Galilean lake. There's a crowd around him and they are growing hungry. We're told by Matthew that Jesus took bread, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to the disciples to distribute to the crowd. Those, of course, are words we know well from the Last Supper in the upper room. Take, bless, break, give. Same words here, same pattern. Matthew seems to be drawing a dotted line between the upper room and the lakeshore. Think of it as a trail of breadcrumbs going in one direction and then the other, as if to say to the reader, the faith community, that is, that communion occurs not only in the upper room, but also on the lower lakeshore. Not only in the liturgy, but also in daily life. Once communion has been placed in our hands, it seeks the hands of others to offer it there. In this story, a crowd fills the frame. And immediately, if you're like me, when you hear that word crowd, you think two things, right? Masks required. Physical distancing. We need our corona pole 6 feet apart. This is how, in a few short months, our sense of the world has shifted in our thinking. Crowds. Two other descriptive words in this story have also taken different meaning, profound significance and relevance as a result of our viral year. Those two words are sick and hungry. Jesus, we're told, had compassion on the crowds and healed those who were sick. It is the disciples who noticed the hunger and approached Jesus with what I would call a sensible plan. Send them away to get food for themselves. Sensible, wouldn't you agree? Maybe there's some fear in there, couched behind the reasonable proposal, some fear there won't be enough. Maybe there's some anger, some resentment of the hungry people. They could be doing more, but have chosen not to. Maybe there's some shame. We could be doing more, but have chosen not to. Fear, anger, shame. Do you recognize any of those feelings? There might be one more besides in the mix, among others, but one more, very possibly. John the Baptist, who we know has helped us to define what it means to be a Christian, one who raises a voice, speaking truth to power in social protest when needed. He has done so. And as I've said before, when we speak truth to power, we can expect it will not be a one-way conversation. Power has spoken back. John the Baptizer was imprisoned for being so vocal. And then just now, before this moment in Matthew, executed by Herod. Jesus and the disciples have to be feeling this keenly, both as threat and as personal loss. Some of John's disciples may have commingled with those of Jesus and be in this circle now. And if so, there's an added sense of weariness beyond the fear and the anger and the shame, grief. How strange it seems with so much gone of life and love to still live on. Send them away. We're weary, we're afraid, we're angry, we're ashamed. Send them away. It's the logical thing to do. And Jesus counters and says, you give them something to eat. Words that have echoed through the ages as the foundation and framework of the Christian ethic of compassion and justice ministries. Give them something to eat. We don't hand off to others in a time of need. We ask, where is the need and how can we be there? They resist further, explaining how little there is to share, and he resists their resistance and proceeds, as we said a moment ago, to take what they take, to bless, to break, to give. Essentially, placing communion in their hands. And once he does, a miracle ensues. They feed thousands, 5,000 men, and surely thousands more of women and children. Love, miracles. That's how the novelist Willa Cather would explain it when she says, where there is great love, there are always miracles. Once someone has offered to us the loving gift of grace, placing communion in our hands. Even once, even long ago, maybe we're remembering as a child that gift, or in later years, or recently. Once someone has placed that loving gift of grace in our hands, it's as though something in us wants to move beyond our want. Beyond our fears, beyond our anger and shame and even weariness and grief, to place that gift of communion in the hands of others. In that moment, the disciples become more than they are, give more than they would have preferred, risk more than they were ready to dare, trust more than their belief would have recommended that they do, stepped beyond the known way. It's a miracle. Loaves and fishes is how we describe these moments, these events in life where something is lost, but something else even greater is found. But loaves and fishes can also describe that turning of the heart from a sense of scarcity and fear to a sense of abundance and courage. By the end of this story, these reticent disciples, these reluctant priests have gathered up even more than they began with, as Ms. Laura shared earlier, and we know that experience. I got so much more out of it than I gave. Loaves and fishes. Has that ever happened to you? We begin with reluctance. Surely not. I don't think so. Maybe some other time. The math isn't adding up. I'd rather play it safe for now. Come back and ask me some other time. And then somehow, from somewhere, maybe it's a memory of communion in our hands, some yes wells up within us. And we hear that voice echoing across the ages, you give them something to eat. And so we do. We do. Our hands open to receive, now open to give. Take, bless, break, give is embodied in our own lives, practicing a faith greater than our own, a love more ample than we possess. And our time and energies and resources become more than they were. This has been a season of bringing communion in our hands into a sick and hungry and hurting world. While we've been away from this table, we've been bringing the table to the world. We've been walking out on the streets of our neighborhoods, talking more with neighbors, waving. We've been lingering, listening, reading, pondering. We've been voicing wrong, speaking up for the silenced. There have been notes and note cards and phone calls and prayers and letters. We've made masks and brought ribbons and tied them in prayer. We've made financial gifts, meal preparations for the hungry. We've had reading partners and pen pals. And now this month of August opens up to invite us to care for those who have been detained and are now in quarantine and needing the care and love and provision of those who hold communion in our hands, waiting to share it with others. Willa Cather had it right. Where there's great love, there are always miracles, and miracles wait to be revealed in this time. In courage and openness, in more surrender, more willingness, more readiness than we thought we had inside of us. More growing in trust in our relationship with God, in walking with Jesus along this ragged path. Assurance that we are not alone, that the Spirit is near and stirring and moving, powerful and present and purposeful in our lives through this viral year and in our life together. I mentioned last Sunday that the Kairos Shalom Sunday School class had chosen to make greeting cards for those in our neighboring hospital, Metropolitan Methodist Hospital, who care for COVID-19 patients. That hospital has a great concentration of those patients, and there are 250 on that staff who relate to those patients in care and healing ways. 250 note cards were prepared and on Friday delivered to the hospital. A few of them came from children, and those were especially precious, children's messages to these caregivers. I like how you dress every day. Special delivery, French fries and love. You rock. And the one that has stayed in my heart this week from a young girl, I love what you are doing for the world. What did she mean exactly? I love what you are doing for the world. Healing people who have a virus? Or did she mean showing the world what love looks like? I love what you were doing for others. Did she mean treating people who are sick? Or did she mean showing the world what it means in a season of practicing an abundance of caution everywhere we go, that it is possible at one and the same time also to practice an abundance of courage and care and compassion everywhere we go and with everyone we meet and with any who are in need? Is that what she meant? I love what you are doing for the world. What do you think she meant? It's Communion Sunday today. Some of us will gather for Zoom sharing of the table at 5:30 this evening. It's a tentative plan. It's not perfect, but we hope it is grace-filled to observe the pattern, take, bless, break, give, and offer and receive the signs of grace in that table sharing. All will be invited there. Whether you come to that gathering or remember from some other time, communion in your hands. We're invited to offer that communion into the hands of others. In the words of Thomas Porter, we'll hear in just a moment, "See how my people have nothing to eat. Give them the bread that is you." If the young girl were writing that card to Laurel Heights, perhaps, or even to you, you and me, we who have said yes beyond our wants, beyond our fears, our reservations and apprehensions, our selfishness, our anger or fear or grief or shame, have said yes anyway. Because where there is great love, there are always miracles, including in the hearts of those who would follow Jesus. If she were writing to us, I wonder what her card would say. Would it say, "I believe it would. I hope it might." Would it say, "Thank you. Thank you. I love what you are doing for the world."